You're muted.
I am. Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome. It's 1:15, and I'm going to start fast because I suspect that I have a lot to say. And today we only have 45 minutes of lecture. The yesterday's exercise on the binomial, the Poisson and Gaussian, was hopefully one that made you by now realize, okay, what do these distributions look like? And when is it a good approximation for the binomial to be a Poisson? That is when n is high and p is low. And when is a Poisson like a Gaussian? Well, that's when lambda, n times p, is reasonably high, 20 or so. And this is also the reason why we, when we have a histogram, assign the square root of n as the uncertainty on the number of entries in a histogram on each bin. Because the chance of ending in a specific bin is low, but there are many entries typically. And so we assign the square root. And that's an assumption which is good if there are many in the bin, but it's not that good if there are few, because the Poisson does not look like a Gaussian when lambda is very low. However, the chi-square will have to live with that. It doesn't have any options. But that's what we're going to redeem today, and much more with the likelihood. And finally, the binomial also comes to look like the Gaussian, even if p is high, as long as n is high enough. It will never look like a Poisson, but it ends up looking like a Gaussian. And with that said, let us start on today's lecture, which is on the likelihood, the principle of maximum likelihood. Here we are. And we will rely on Plato, who says, I shall stick to the principle of likelihood. And what he didn't know that he meant by that is that he will stick to this principle, namely, if you have a PDF with parameters theta, what is the chance that you will find n observations in the this small interval? And you can do that by multiplying the PDF times the width of the interval. And note, it's not an integral of the PDF, it's the value height of the PDF. Well, what if it's a wide PDF, then these gets to be small values? Yes. And that is why the likelihood can only be compared to other likelihoods. It's hard to say anything about the value of the likelihood. I'll return to that. So let's say we have a set of measurements x and some parameters in a likelihood function. Well, then the likelihood is defined as simply multiplying together the PDF value given these parameters for each x. So if you have a Gaussian centered at 0 and width 1, then if the x value, one of the x values is, you know, 100, it's going to get an extremely small probability here. And so the overall likelihood is going to be small. It's not likely that that point was from that PDF. So what you try then is to change the values here, the parameters of your fit, so that you maximize the likelihood. And that's the principle of maximum likelihood. It's not a lot different from the chi-square, right? Before we just had a chi-square here, and we had a different expression here, and it was a function of the parameters, and we try to minimize the chi-square. All right. This principle turns out to be extremely central in statistics, because it can be shown that this likelihood is consistent. It converges towards the right values, you could say. It's asymptotically normal, so it converges with Gaussian errors. And finally, and this is hard to beat, it's efficient. And that sounds pretty good, but from a mathematical point of view, that actually means more or less it's optimal. It means that there's a certain amount of information And a sort of a minimum variance you can get. You can't get an infinitely precise result with limited data of limited quality. There's a bound on that. And the bound can be seen here. And it turns out that it reaches this bound, which means you can't do any better. So in that sense, the likelihood fit is optimal. Whether it can be applied in practice is more doubtful. For example, the model you have, is that the perfect model? If not, well, then the proof falls apart. Then it's not necessarily the best way of doing things. But, well, it is good. And it's also from this principle of maximum likelihood that you can actually deduce why we do the mean and why we calculate the variance in the way we do. This principle is sort of the starting point for everything. Now, how do we find the maximum? Well, first of all, we don't find the maximum of the likelihood itself. You can already see here that there's a logarithm in front of the likelihood. And that's because when you multiply a lot of small numbers, you get an incredibly small number, which no one is going to be able to do on a computer because, you know, 10 to the minus 10,000, for example, that would be such a small number that the numerical precision would hate it. So for that reason, we take the logarithm. You still have to maximize it, so that's fine. And then you want to find the optimum. And then not only do you take the logarithm, you actually also put an offset factor of -2. We'll return to that. Well, actually, it's because then it matches the chi-square except for a constant offset. So in the chi-square, you might get a chi-square of 20. And in the -2 log likelihood, you might get a value of 1,020,000. And it doesn't tell you anything. Like the chi-square tells you something directly, the likelihood does not, because it depends on both model, but also how many parameters you put in and how many values and so you can't say anything from the 1,020,000, but when things change, it behaves like the chi-square. So if you change one of the parameters, the chi-square will go up from its minimum and the likelihood will do the same thing at the same pace, except the likelihood is slightly more optimal. And that means that it might go up faster, meaning that it constrains the variables, the parameters faster. And there are two types of fits you can do with the likelihood. There's a binned likelihood for histograms, and there's an unbinned likelihood using the PDF directly for single values. Now, the trouble is that, of course, you don't get a goodness of fit. You can't just calculate a p-value for the likelihood. But you do get around the problem of empty bins or low statistics bins. Remember, that's where the chi-square is doing an approximation of saying, I can only do Gaussian errors, I'll do that. But the likelihood doesn't have that problem. Let's look at it in reality. So here I've drawn a case of a histogram with, I hope you agree with me, low statistics. And it's binned, and the original PDF is given in black here. So this is from where I've created this data. And in dashed is the fitted PDF here with a chi-square fit. And I've written the chi-square up here. We take n observed minus n expected and divide it by the uncertainty in the observed. All right, fine. Already we get problems. Well, we can rewrite this because the uncertainty in n observed squared is just n observed. But now we have the problem of empty bins because then we would divide by zero. All right, we say, well, then we exclude the empty bins in this sum. And well, that is already cheating us for information coming from the fact that the bins are empty. So in this case, the chi-square has a few problems with this. We can, of course, also divide by n expected. which means we don't get the zeros. And in this case, I would, in low statistics case, I would prefer this approach. But now it's not clear how many bins to include, because in principle, we can include bins out to plus minus a billion. So that's the status of the chi-square in this case. What does the binned likelihood do? Well, it does what we have up here. It says, I'm still going to loop over the bins, and I'm going to calculate some value, and I'm going to calculate minus twice the logarithm of that value. Then the multiplication here becomes a sum. It's not numerically problematic. But what I'm going to do is instead, I'm going to say, I expect a certain number of events in a bin. Now give me the probability to observe what I've observed and multiply those together, assuming a Poisson distribution. Note, there's no approximation that the Poisson here is Gaussian, right? We do take the Poisson distribution and get a probability out. Now we multiply all the probabilities. And lo and behold, we optimize with respect to that. And you might think, is that ever going to work? What if we had a very narrow Gaussian here? What do we then get? Well, then the measurements out far out here, well, they get a very small probability. We expect, you know, 1 in 1,000, and we observe 2. All right, probability of that, extremely small. The likelihood becomes small, minus twice the likelihood becomes large. It's not the best fit. All right, how about a very wide Gaussian across here? Well, now the expectations become small in the middle, and we observe a lot there. So also this is not optimal. And so this has a minimum, well, minus twice logarithm of it has a minimum somewhere. And this is what the fit is going to converge towards. Okay. What about that was the binned likelihood. But nobody forces you to bin anything. Here's the unbinned likelihood. And this is, to some extent, the very basic of everything. Here, you don't sum over the bins. You sum over the individual measurements, which I've marked in red down here. The individual measurements here, well, you ask, given my PDF, which of course depends on these parameters, what's the probability of observing that value? What is the height of the PDF at the value observed? You multiply together these probabilities. Again, you multiply together probabilities. And again, you take minus 2 log likelihood of it in reality. And then this is what you maximize. And here, note, there's no binning effect here. You don't have to specify bins. You just sum over all the data. And it is this which works extremely nicely, because now there is not even an assumption about binning. And so nothing is going to change if you rebin. Over here, you could imagine rebinning changing things. So if possible, an unbinned likelihood is, I would say, generally nice. All right, some comments. For a large sample, the maximum likelihood is indeed unbiased and has minimum variance. So that's hard to beat. But of course, here the binned likelihood approach, it converges towards the unbinned. And better yet, if you have a lot of statistics, well, then histogramming it doesn't ruin anything, and using the chi-square doesn't ruin anything. So suddenly you get a goodness of fit measure for free, and you can check if the fit is good. That is why the chi-square is nice if there's a lot of statistics. And also, when you ask Minui to minimize or curve fit, whatever you like, then it turns out that the chi-square is simply more robust. Imagine that there's one measurement extremely far away. The likelihood is gonna die on that, but the chi-square is not. The chi-square is gonna say, well, my expectation is 1 in a trillion, which is gonna kill the likelihood, and I observe one, well, the difference is approximately one, that's fine. I'll add a little to the chi-square. So the chi-square is much more robust, and that's why I would generally recommend when you do a fit, start with the chi-square. And once you have something that converges, well, then you have good input parameters for the likelihood fit, which is more likely to converge afterwards. And then, yeah, this goodness of fit. The problem is if you get 1,020,000 for your likelihood, or -2 times log likelihood, then how to compare that? Well, the only thing you can do is to simulate the whole thing again. So if you want a p-value out, well, then you generate data. First, you do a fit. And then from these fit parameters, you simulate according to them and fit many times. Let's say 1,000 times. And then you get a distribution out of likelihood values. Notice here they are -180,000. So that's, you know, a wild 118,000. That's a large value. But I did it here 1,000 times. And this is actually from my thesis. Believe me, computers, it took a little while. It ran for a little while. 1,000 times, this was also a fit in many dimensions and so on. And I got a distribution of likelihood values. And notice one thing, it looks Gaussian. So I could do it with more. I could simulate 1,000,000, but actually I didn't need to. I got 1,000, I can see it's Gaussian. Well, it has a funny feature here, but I think it's all right. And now I ask, in my original fit, what was the likelihood value I got? Well, it was here. The probability of getting a worse likelihood value, sorry, you want to minimize the -2 log likelihood in our case. So you integrate up and you ask the probability of getting a higher likelihood, so worse fit. Well, what is that? You integrate that and there you get a p-value out. So for the likelihood, it can be done, but it is cumbersome, computationally heavy, and so on. And that is why we like the chi-square, because most often the approximations are reasonably good and there's statistics enough, and then we get a p-value out of the blue. Finally, there's something called the likelihood ratio test. And that is because, well, when you have two hypotheses, then one might have a likelihood of 1,020,000 and the other has 1,040,000. And whereas the offset constant doesn't do anything, well, the ratio of the likelihoods or the difference in -2 log likelihood, as shown below, D, this difference, actually tells you a lot about which is the better hypothesis. Not only does it tell you which is the better because it has the lowest either chi-square likelihood, but also it tells you how much better. You can put a value on it. You can say which is more likely by how much. You can quantify it. And again, the likelihood ratio tests. Well, imagine you have two models. One is called the null model and the other is called the alternative model. And we'll return to that a lot more. Well, if none of them have any free parameters, they are called simple models. It could be a model saying, you know, the universe age is 12 billion years and the other one is 13 billion years, right? There's no parameters in that. You just take two numbers. Well, in this case, the Nyman-Pearson lemma states that the likelihood ratio is actually the best possible test one can make. That is, if you can write up a likelihood for the two models. Now, it might also be that people come with a null model, which is here is some flat distribution. And the alternative model is here's some flat distribution with a peak. Now, notice that the alternative model has more parameters in it. So of course it should do better. Well, not of course. You're only guaranteed that it does better if it's so-called nested, if the alternative model contains the null model and then something on top. Here we added a peak in the alternative model on top, and so it's nested. And in that case, it turns out that this value d actually distributes itself according to a chi-square distribution. If you're fitting with three parameters more, as a peak would be, then you should, with no peak, expect d to go down by three, simply because you have these additional parameters. If it goes down a lot more, well, then it becomes unlikely that the null model can be obtained. We'll talk a lot more about this. But anyway, this is called Wilk's theorem. And so D will distribute itself with like a chi-square distribution with number of degrees of freedom in the difference in the number of parameters. So it's fitting the same data, but if this has two parameters and this has five, then it should be three parameters chi-square distribution we can compare D to. All right, that was a lot on the on likelihood. So to summarize just, quickly, I would say the likelihood is first of all, one of the principal components of statistics at all. And to boil it down to what we're going to use it for, well, the chi-square has problems with small statistics. You can, instead of the chi-square, do a binned likelihood where you do not have to assume, where you can take the empty bins into account. You simply say, well, here's a Poisson distribution. And notice zero is not a problem. You expect one, you observe zero, or you expect 1.1 and you observe zero. Well, that has a probability, which is not even bad. Fine, then goes into the likelihood. Or you can decide not to bin at all and just say, I'm going to loop over all single measurements. And well, there I have my likelihood. But notice if you have a million measurements of something, just 100,000, it's a little cumbersome for the fit to calculate the likelihood because that's a loop of 100,000 for each iteration in the fit. So then it becomes slow and there's no need for it. You can bin it and you can do a chi-square fit and it'll do fine. But in those statistics, the likelihood is needed. And then finally, we're going to use it for hypothesis testing, and I'll say more about it. Yes, please, any questions or comments or, yeah, things that you find strange?
I have a question, if no one else.
Please, Sting. Yeah.
First off, in the beginning of the lecture, you changed the... not so much. Slide 6, I think it was. You changed the was the variance of the n observed to and this then said that if it's squared, it's just n observed.
Yeah.
How is that correlating?
I can't see that. How did I go from here to here? I presume the question is.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. So this is now on slide 6 is sort of the basic chi-square written up. You take what you observe, compare it to your models model in units of the uncertainty on the observed, and you square the damn thing and sum it. All right. Mm. But if this is from a histogram, then the assumption is that n observed is Poisson distributed in a bin. Namely, if you observe, say, 100 entries in a bin, but there's 10,000 entries in the histogram, then the probability of ending in just that bin is 1 in 100, but you had 10,000 chances, right? And now it's a Poisson distribution. It's a reasonable assumption, right? So you would expect the uncertainty to be plus minus 10, 100 plus minus 10. So that's what you put in the bin. And given that lambda is 100, it's a very Gaussian uncertainty. So that is what we put in here.
Mm. Okay, makes sense.
Cool. Thanks. How did you decide which likelihood to use, the binned or the unbinned? And should we use both to see which one works better every time? Thank you for that question. Sometimes you're given data which is already binned, and then the answer is very clear. You have no option but using the binned. If not, I would generally skip the binned and say, I'm going to try the chi-square to begin with, just because I would always do that. And then I would go to the unbinned likelihood. Yeah, I guess that sums it up. And Andreas asks, so if it's because of speed, one would do a binned likelihood. Yeah, let's say you have 10 million measurements, then you would clearly bin it. And anyway, if you have that many measurements, you'd go to the chi-square. So the binned likelihood is mostly used when you are given data in a binned fashion. Victor asked, you said likelihood shines with low statistics or empty bins. With high statistics, we rather use the chi-square. Can you shortly also summarize why then the chi-square is superior? It's superior because it gives a goodness of fit. You get a chi-square value and a number of degrees of freedom, and from that you can get a p-value. You cannot for the likelihood. That there's no way of doing that. Well, that's a lie, right? You can simulate your way out of it, but that's of course heavy. And Jens asks the lovely question of, can you elaborate a bit on the constant offset factor minus two? Yes, I can. I regret not having written up the expression for the Gaussian, but notice in the likelihood here, the PDF, if the PDF is a Gaussian, right, then you put in a likelihood, here, if the PDF is a Gaussian here, then you loop over the bins and you have a Gaussian. But remember, we took logarithm, so now it's a sum over the bins, and the Gaussian has an exponential part. So that cancels out, and now we have a sum over the normalization, and then we have a sum over what's inside the exponential in the Gaussian. And that is minus a half, and then suddenly the observed minus the expected divided by the uncertainties and the whole thing squared with a minus half in front. And suddenly it looks extremely like the chi-square. Except, of course, it has the other sum over the normalization, which, you know, becomes some strange factor. And that's why the likelihood has some offset factor that the chi-square doesn't. And that is why it's a minus two in front, because if the sum here has minus a half in there, well, you know, when you do this, then suddenly you get to be like the likelihood if you multiply by minus two. And then it also becomes a minimization problem, which is typically what people do. I hope that provided the answer, Jens. And then Jamie asks, hi, let's say that we have 30 individual observations of neutron concentrations in 30 different sampling locations. How relevant is the binning of that continuous variable? One could guess that the finer or narrower bins are until limiting threshold, the closer to the continuous case and therefore better. Yeah, binning is a fine art. I would say when you mention the numbers 30 and 30, the unbinned is not gonna have any problem at all. However, binning 30, I would say, well, that gets small, right? I think I put 25 entries in the plot you see here. And quickly, if you bin that, you get very few entries in each bin, which is why probably here, it's a good thing to say, all right, I don't bin. Any other questions? Because if not, then I will rush on. Well, I'm asked about the alternative model, and I understand if that was unclear. We will do a lot more on hypothesis testing later. So I think we'll skip that. And if any of you have questions on that, I'll gladly answer it in the exercises later today. I'll stop sharing.